following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Daily Gazette Company presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast Studio in Schenectady, New York. We have another great show for you. We're going to preview the college football playoff title game between Ohio State and Notre Dame on Monday night with Bill Rabinowitz. I've worked with Bill at the York Daily Record. He covers Ohio State for the Columbus Dispatch. We had him on a few years ago talking college football, so I'm glad he had some time to take to talk about the game Monday night down in Atlanta. Should be a lot of fun. With Ohio State and Notre Dame battling for that college football playoff championship. We'll preview the Union Hockey Weekend for the men and women. The men host Dartmouth and Harvard this weekend at Messer Inc., while the women go to Dartmouth and Harvard. Unusual schedule that way. For the men's side, we'll talk with Cullen Ferguson, Brandon Burr, and Lucas Massey. And on the women's side, it's going to be assistant coach Sean Skelly, who took over for Tony Macy. Tony was away on some business. Then players Maren Friday, Maddie Leaney, and Amanda Kwan. And during these interviews, I talked to both Massey and Kwan. They're Southern California natives, and I was asked them some questions about the wildfires there in the Los Angeles area. So you'll hear what they had to say about that. And more college hockey. Eric Lang, the head coach of the American International men's hockey team, will join me. He'll talk about the stunning announcement back in November that the school was dropping the hockey program from Division I to Division II, and also talk about something initiative he's going to have in April with the college hockey transfer portal workout. So we'll see. We'll talk to him about that as well. So coming up, it's Bill Rabinowitz on the college football playoff championship game between Ohio State and Notre Dame. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast. Explore the benefits of subscribing to the Daily Gazette, like our convenient e-edition, app, personalized newsletters, and unique reader rewards when you join. Start your membership today. Offers redeemable at www.dailygazette.com.
Hi, this is New York State Assemblyman Angelo Santabarbara. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast. Monday night in Atlanta, the college football playoff championship game will take place between Ohio State and Notre Dame. And covering that game for the Columbus Dispatch is my good friend from the York Daily Record days, Bill Rabinowitz. Bill, how's it going? Welcome back to the podcast. It's been a few years since we had you on.
Yeah, nice to be on with you, Ken. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. So, just how it was drawn up, number 7, number 8 seed going for a title. I mean, how surprising is that?
Well, I mean, first of all, they were really not 7-8 in terms of the rankings. They were, what, 5-6?
Yeah.
Just the way the bracket works. But I don't think anyone would have been surprised at the beginning of the year that Ohio State would be in it. And honestly, Notre Dame's not that big a surprise. Now, after Ohio State lost to Michigan and after Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois, obviously that changed people's perspectives on those teams. We had to do this silly little bracket thing before the playoffs started. And I picked Notre Dame to get to the finals. I didn't pick Ohio State, to be honest. I kind of lost faith in them and didn't know how they'd react. And I figured, well, let's go with Oregon. And I didn't want to be a homer, to be honest.
But
it doesn't shock me that Ohio State's in it, even after the Michigan game, because they've always had the talent. And he knew that. And they just hadn't played to their ability until the playoffs. You know, Tennessee, especially Oregon, you know, even last week, they really didn't play all that well. They kept shooting themselves in the foot with penalties on offense. And, you know, but their defense is really good, and they found a way to win.
Yeah, let's talk about the, you know, as you mentioned, both teams had some significant loss results in the season. Let's start with the Ohio State. I mean, they did lose Oregon in a wild game early in the year. But that Michigan game, it seems like Ryan Day cannot beat Michigan. Why is that?
Well, I mean, mean, I think you have to take them game by game. You know, the first 2 years, of the first of all, they did beat them in 2019, beat them like a drum. Mm-hmm. And then they would have crushed them in 2020. Michigan had a terrible team, and then they canceled because of COVID. So even Michigan players told me the next year they would have been ugly. So, you know, but then 21, 22, you have to factor in the Connor Stallions thing, where it does help if you get plays. And then 23, that Michigan had a great team. I mean, the national championship team. And it came down to the last drive. So that was, you know, kind of a 50-50 game. This year is inexplicable. I mean, it's inexcusable. They laid an egg. And I think some of it was psychological. I happen to think, I don't have any evidence for this. They're not going to tell you this, you know, this kind of stuff. I think that when Will Howard got hit in the second quarter, that it affected him. And I think they lost confidence in his ability to throw it, at least throw it downfield. And they kept running into the teeth of Michigan's defense. I don't understand it. I don't think anyone understands it. Coaches have been apologetic and kind of fallen on their sword about it. So I don't know that we'll ever really know what happened in that game. But look, that's an inexcusable loss.
Yeah. But how much did this, you know, sitting on this and then getting ready for the college football playoff? I mean, they came out and then, dominated Tennessee. And then what we saw in the Rose Bowl against Oregon, just the way they played that first half. Do you think they realize that they are a talented team and maybe it's not all Ryan Day's? The fact that they're a good team. I mean, how surprised were you how they've played so far in those first couple games in the playoffs?
Well, I knew they had it in them. I mean, this is a really talented team, arguably the most talented team that they've ever had. I mean, I talked to Urban Meyer yesterday because he was inducted to the College Football Hall of Fame, and he thinks it's the most as talented a team as he's ever seen, at least in recent years. So the talent was never the issue. The defense has been really good all year, except for the first Oregon game. It's just that they didn't really put it together until the playoff. And I think what happened is – they had a team meeting after the Michigan game, and I think that they just decided, okay, you know, we're 0-4 against Michigan. This is the senior class. They're 0-4 the Big Ten. They didn't win the Big Ten because of those Michigan losses. This is all we got left. So we can either kind of just mail it in and get on with our lives, or we can come and do what we came back this year to do. And I think that resolve has carried them. They've been a united team. They've been a focused team. And they've been, for the most part, a dominant team.
Now, we talked about Notre Dame, their early season loss in Northern Illinois at home. That could have been a devastating blow. So they, with them still being an independent, they have to run the table here. So if you look at that game, how much do you think that turned their season around?
Well, I think it's almost exactly what you said. They realized they had no margin for error. And fortunately for them, they didn't have a tough schedule. USC is down this year. They, I think, Army was undefeated, but Army, let's face it, is Army in terms of being a national power. And so they didn't really have a gauntlet to go through like Ohio State did with the Big Ten. And so they took care of business. They're a very good defensive team. They run the ball well. Not much of a passing game, which I think is going to come back. It's going to be a big factor in this one because they're going to have to throw the ball. But they, they've been resilient. Penn State, it was a 50-50 game for the most part, but they made the plays at the end.
So the way this format is set up with the first year of the 12-team format, the top four seeds got first-round byes. And then the others got to play home games. Do you like that format? Because obviously, if we look at the first round, teams got first round byes, all lost in the next round.
Right. Well, some of that is because two of those teams, Arizona State and Boise, and a correctly seeded bracket wouldn't have been the third and fourth seeds. Mm-hmm. Georgia had to play with their backup quarterback, of course, and Oregon had the misfortune. I feel bad for Oregon. I mean, they do everything right. They go undefeated. They win the Big Ten. And what's their first game? Ohio State.
Yeah.
I mean, so you kind of have to look at it individually. I like the format. I like having home games. The game against Tennessee was a really cool event. I mean, there were tons of Tennessee fans, more visiting fans than I've ever seen at the Horseshoe. They were quieted quite early, but but it was, you know, fun to see that kind of atmosphere. And yeah, I like it. You know, people up here have always said, well, wait till an SEC team has to play in the cold in December in the North. Well, we got to see that. And, you know, it didn't go well for them.
Yeah.
I mean, before the Tennessee game, some of their linemen came out for pregame warmups shirtless, you know, like tough guy stuff. And it's like, okay, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I've never done that in my life. Thank God. I'm not that silly. But how do you view this matchup on Monday night? I mean, what's going to be the key, first of all, for Ohio State to win it?
I just think they have to not make the mistakes they made against Texas. They can't consistently commit these penalties that set them back. You know, Will Howard can't commit turnovers. He has to be the Will Howard that he's been for 90% of the year and not the Will Howard he's been for 10% of the year. You know, he threw a pick six against Penn State and lost a fumble at the goal line. Against Michigan, he had the two interceptions. They were really costly. Even in the Texas game, he underthrew a ball, didn't see a linebacker dropping back into an interception. If he could avoid that stuff and just play the way he's played the rest of the time, you know, I think Ohio State is a really good chance. I think Ohio State's better. I mean, the big difference is that they have explosiveness on offense that Notre Dame just doesn't have. Mm. And Notre Dame doesn't throw the ball very well. You know, they've gotten a little fortunate. I mean, they played Georgia with a backup quarterback and got some breaks in that game. And Georgia's been a disappointment all year, really. And Penn State always seems to come up short in big games. So, you know, I think Notre Dame is mentally tough, and I think it's mentally and physically tough. And I think that's going to be a challenge for Ohio State. Not that they aren't, because I think they are, but they're not going to run into a team that's going to get intimidated or roll over for them.
Do you think these men are mental tough? Is that maybe a product of the coaching of Marcus Freeman?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think everything flows from the coach, and that's what he instills in those guys. And so, yeah, I mean, I credit the coaching. I credit the players. I mean, the players are the ones who have to do it.
What does Notre Dame have to do to beat Ohio State?
That's a longer list. I mean, I think they've got to find some offensive balance, because I don't think they can run the ball effectively if they can't throw to loosen up the defense. Otherwise, Ohio State will just stack the box. And Cody Simon and Caleb Downs are just really good against the run, and there just won't be anywhere to go. And Jeremiah Love, Notre Dame's main running back, well, they've got some good ones. He's a little banged up. They're not going to have their left tackle, which is a problem against Ohio State's defensive ends. Jack Sawyer, you may have heard of, and JT Tuimoloau. You know, those are really good players. And so they're going to have to find a way to throw the ball and loosen up Ohio State's defense one way or another. Maybe it's Riley Leonard running the ball. He's a good runner. And that has given Ohio State some problems running quarterbacks. You know, in the playoff, that's been probably the other team's biggest way to move the ball. Defensively, they play man coverage. That's what they like to play. I can't imagine they're going to strictly play man all the time, because good luck. I mean, if you're going to cover those guys, Jeremiah Smith, Emeka Buka, Carnell Tate, and then Travion Henderson out of the backfield, and good luck.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have to mix up the coverages. I think Notre Dame's best chance to win is they kind of muck it up like Michigan did, make it just a slugfest, and hope to pull it out in the fourth quarter. I think that's Notre Dame's formula. I think Ohio State's formula is play the way that they did against Tennessee and Oregon and blow them out and force Notre Dame to do something they can't do very well, which is throw the ball.
Yeah. I think, you know, this year, the first year of the 12-team format, we have seen there's been a lot of exciting games. We wonder how we never had this format before. You know, it was always the polls deciding things. I mean, how exciting has this been for college football? And what do you think it's going to be? I know it's early just for the first year of the 12-team format, but do we see 16 teams down the road?
I think expansion is inevitable in everything, so I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at all. But, you know, I like the 12-team format, certainly compared to the 4-team format. I love the idea of home games. They do have to tweak it. I mean, there's no reason. I'm sorry. I mean, Boise State had a great year. That's, you know, Arizona State had a great year. But they shouldn't have been hosting games You know, and it also hurts those teams when the other team, their first opponent, has already played a game and has gotten momentum from winning. I think that's a bit of a disadvantage that they might have to address. Maybe you can't do anything about it. And I think coaches would probably prefer to have an off week, not risk injury, not risk obviously losing. Yeah. So there is an advantage to being in the quarterfinals right away. But I think they have to tweak the seeding of it. But generally, I like the format.
Yep.
And, you know, look, it gives teams like Indiana, which if you said at the beginning of the year, Indiana will make the playoff, you'd have been laughed at.
Yeah.
Arizona State, what do you have been laughed at? Well, now, you know, used to be in a 14 playoff that unless you were one of the maybe top 15 programs in the country, you really had no chance of getting in. I mean, Penn State has never been was never in the 14 playoff. You know, it was always Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, you know, Georgia toward the end. Those were the teams that dominated. And then you'd have kind of the outlier every now and then. But that was it. Now it's just opened up and it's decided much more on the field.
What would it mean? I mean, I know Michigan won last year, but if Ohio State wins, what does that victory mean for the Big Ten?
Well, I think certainly the Big Ten can stake a claim as being the best conference in the country. I mean, you would have never said that 10 years ago. You would have never said that maybe even, you know, 3 years ago. But Michigan winning last year, and the SEC didn't have a finalist. It was Washington, which now, of course, is in the Big Ten, which is a whole different topic. You know, Ohio State playing Notre Dame. You know, the SEC has did terribly this postseason. I mean, Alabama, you talk about the Ohio State loss to Alabama. Michigan beat Alabama in the bowl game when Michigan was missing more of their players. Mm-hmm. They were like, had nobody, and they still beat Alabama. And Alabama, their quarterback played. You know, Ohio State crushed Tennessee. It's kind of funny, but yeah, I would have to say the Big Ten is the best conference in the country right now, or at least they were this year.
Have you gotten used to having Washington, UCLA, and USC in the Big Ten?
It's weird. I mean, it was kind of fun to go to Oregon. Ohio State was supposed to play them in Eugene in 2020, mm-hmm. and it got canceled because of COVID. So that was cool. But no, look, I don't know anybody who's happy that the Pac-12 is gone, at least the Pac-12 as we knew it.
Yeah.
It was a great conference. And, it didn't do great in the postseason. And I don't think sports on the West Coast is as, you know, ingrained in the culture as it is with the SEC and even the Big Ten. I mean, I don't think there's the passion among just kind of casual fans that there is here. But they should have a conference. The Western United States should have a conference to themselves. I mean, you can make a case that you know, the schools that are in the Big Ten are a better fit for the Big Ten than the ones that are in the ACC. I mean, Stanford playing in the ACC is just ludicrous.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw the video of the press box at Penn State being torn down. You cover Penn State.
Tears to my eyes.
Yeah. what are your fond memories of that press box?
Well, I think I always bumped my knee in one of those little, you know, knobs or whatever under the desk. I usually tripped over one of those bumps that that just there for no reason. You're walking and all of a sudden, oh, there's a little step in the middle of this. It's, you know, it was like a maze. The sidelines, I mean, my sideline generally was okay because I was in the front row, but people behind me, when I saw that thing come down, I was like, oh, there are a lot of happy people there.
I covered a couple games when I was at the York Daily Record, and I just, all I remember is, you know, they tell you not to cheer in the press box, and you have people cheering in the press box. And I was like, stop it.
They didn't have that when I was there, no. but the Penn State side's different, you know, from the visiting side, so I didn't hear any of them. And I know a lot of the Penn State writers, and they're good guys, good people. I'm sure they were not doing that. Good reporters. So I'm sure that didn't happen with them. But it was unique that you know, getting to State College is such a pain, as you know, especially in Ohio. But the atmosphere, I'll say this: the atmosphere at Penn State games is the best. It really is the best. The whiteouts are wonderful. The fans are into it. It's that part of the experience is great.
How's your hockey game going?
Played last night, Vandalay Industries. I hadn't played in a couple of months. I kind of messed on my back a little bit. I'm old and out of shape and fat, and that's usually not a good combination playing against 18-year-olds. But we won 4-0.
That's good. That's good. Remember, it's a lower body injury. Not the old, the old species.
It's a lower body, right? Lower body. I think I've got a lower body, upper body. I've got it all.
Bill, it's always appreciated. By the way, you have a prediction for the game Monday?
Yeah, I think Ohio State's going to win. I think, I don't remember this exactly, I think I had it like 31-13 or something, like 31-14, something like that. I can't remember. I think Ohio State will win. I think they're a better team. I don't think it's a good matchup for Notre Dame, especially as banged up as they are. But yeah, Notre Dame's good enough that if Ohio State doesn't play well and they muck it up, Notre Dame can win.
Yep. Well, Bill, as always, appreciate it. Where can people follow your coverage Monday night?
At dispatch.com, and I'm on Blue Sky at Bill Rabinowitz, Rabinowitz, at Blue Sky. I'm pretty much off Twitter, X, whatever. I'm pretty much off that. So Blue Sky is where to find me.
Well, Bill, I appreciate it. If you don't have to know, you've been busy getting ready for this, and safe travels to Atlanta. Please say hello to Aaron, your wife, for me.
That's Anna
Lori. We'll do that. Thank you. That's Bill Rabinowitz. We'll be back. We'll talk to you in college hockey next here on the Parting Shots Podcast.
Man, I loved playing high school sports growing up. And it's fun being a fan now, don't get me wrong, but sitting in the stands feels like I'm missing out on all the action, you know? I wanted to get back in the game. So I signed up to be a high school official. It takes me back to my playing days. I'm supporting students, and I get paid to make the big calls. Do you want to see the game up close? Sign up to become an official in New York at highschoolofficials.com.
Hi, this is Union College men's hockey head coach Josh Hoge. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast, and we're getting ready for another weekend of Union College men's and women's hockey. We'll start with the men. They went up to the North Country last weekend, split the games between Clarkson and St. Lawrence. They had a 3-1 lead against Clarkson early in the second period, but dropped a 5-3 decision, giving up 4 unanswered goals. It was the second consecutive game that Union wasted a 2-goal lead. They were able to come back against Yale and win 4-3 in the previous game, but were not able to do so against Clarkson. And then on Saturday, in a wild affair, Union won 8-5. The Garner Chargers jumped out to a 5-0 lead in the first period. And St. Lawrence made things interesting in the third period, but Union prevailed. And the game was, Brad, as we mentioned in the top, Brandon Burr had a hat trick. And Lucas Massey, the freshman goaltender, made his first collegiate start. Played decently, and who knows if he gets another start down the road. He did play the second period of the Alaska Fairbanks game, the second game of that two-game series back in November. Just played the second period of that one. But obviously, Josh Hoge, he mentioned on Wednesday's podcast about giving Josh or Lucas a chance, and he did the job. So Union came away with a split, and they're tied for second place with Clarkson in the ECAC hockey standings. This weekend, it's Dartmouth and Harvard. Dartmouth was the team that knocked Union out of the ECAC hockey tournament quarterfinals last year, sweeping that series in 2 games in the best of 3. Dartmouth is struggling a little bit right now, just 2-5-1 in their last 8 games after starting 6-1-1. The Big Green were picked to finish third by the coaches in their preseason poll. Dartmouth right now a couple points behind Union. As I said, Union tied for second with Clarkson. They're both 6 points behind conference-leading Quinnipiac. So let's hear from the Union players. Of course, you heard from Josh Hoge on Wednesday, the head coach. So let's hear from defenseman Colin Ferguson, forward Brandon Burr, and goaltender Lucas Massey.
For Colin and Brandon, last time you guys faced Dartmouth, they ended your season. So what's this game going to be like Friday night? Is it revenge or just it's moved on from the last year?
No, you definitely use it as fuel. At the end of the day, you want to take whatever you can to fire yourself up for the game. And if that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do. We just want to make sure we get the job done.
Brandon?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like, we know what they did to us last year, so we're going to use that to fuel us for this game coming up.
What do you remember about those two games up in Hanover? I mean, how disappointing was it? I mean, it was like both close games. You guys had chances to win both of those games.
Yeah, it was obviously heartbreaking losing, like, knowing as the seniors' last games there. But, yeah, it's just not great memories looking back on it. We know they're a hardworking team, so we got to make sure we're working hard when it comes to the game.
Colin, what are your thoughts about those two games last year?
Yeah, I mean, they're a structured, disciplined team. They're going to work hard, and we need to be ready for that on Friday night.
Starting down the line, looking at the standings, you kind of have these two teams right behind you with Colgate in between. So just how important is this weekend to kind of put in some separation between you guys and staying in that top four?
Yeah, I mean, I try to preach it every day to the guys that every game we play from now on out is the most important game of the year. It doesn't matter who we play, it is going to be the most important because the race is so tight. And we want to make sure that we're giving ourselves a chance to be in that top four and have a bye in the playoffs. So,
good question. Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like, every game we know it's 3 points, like a 6-point swing potentially. So, if we can win all these games, like, they're all playoff games now at this point. So,
yeah, I think it's kind of all been said. I think I'm really learning how tight our conference is. And, yeah, every game just holds so much weight. So, just being as prepared as possible.
Go on. Yeah, Sean?
Yeah, I'm good, guys. You guys kind of asked my questions.
Okay. Colin, how big was that last Saturday? You had the 3-1 lead at Clarkson. You lost 5-3. You guys came out with, I guess, some anger, scoring 5 first-period goals. I mean, how big was it to be able to come back, split the weekend, and you know, you're 3-1 in 2025 right now?
Yeah, I think it's just important to keep the train rolling. I think we're a team that's confident in our scoring ability, and we need to just keep that belief going throughout the rest of the season. We don't want to get too high or too low. I think that's really important. We have a offensively gifted group, I believe, so we just need to believe in each other and make sure we take care of our structure and our D zone, and I think we'll keep winning games.
Brandon?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, obviously that 5-3 loss to Clarkson wasn't too great. We blew that 3-1 lead, but to bounce back like we did against St. Lawrence in that first period was good, but again, probably shouldn't be letting up 5 goals a game either, so there's some positives and negatives to take from that.
One positive for you, Lucas, you got your first start in your college career. When did you know, and how nervous were you when you found out?
I think I got told right before we ate lunch and did pre-scout, so definitely a bit nervous, maybe hard to get some food down right away, but I mean, I've been wanting it, and I was super excited more than anything.
How much did it relax you that your teammates scored 5 first period goals there? Does that make it a lot easier for you?
They definitely made my job pretty easy there. I think at that point, when you get up early, it just becomes about managing momentum. And you know the other team's going to come with a push, so. I think, like you said, it's nice knowing that you have a group that's going to score goals for you, and they took care of me, so it was nice.
Would it have been nice to get a start or two maybe during the non-conference season? That way you could have gotten your feet wet a little bit instead of, I know you did replace Kyle in one of the games early in the season, but to be able to get a start and play a full 60, you think it would have been easier for you and been less nervous going to your first start being a conference game?
Yeah, I think obviously in a perfect world it would have been great, but it's out of my control. And I think with the hot start we had, Kyle, you know, he's earned everything he's gotten, and he's led us in a great direction and will continue to do so. So I don't really think of it that way. I just try to be ready for whatever comes my way.
Colin, how well do you think he played Saturday?
Yeah, I actually watched the game back, and I think he really stepped up when we needed him to. Like I said, we got up 5 goals, but sometimes there were times where our structure and our D-zone fell apart a little bit, and I think he came up with some pretty big saves. There was a couple shots that they got in the slot, and he came up big. So, I mean, I couldn't be happier for him.
Brandon, how important is it to have, knowing that Lucas can do the job in case Kyle gets hurt or stumbles down there?
It's great to know that we have 2 very capable goalies, 3 even. Like, Sherry's really good as well, so it just puts a lot of confidence in our group.
Lucas, I want to ask you, you're from California, right near the wildfires. How's your family? Has your family been affected by it?
Yeah, actually, my cousin and her boyfriend had to evacuate their home. They live near Beverly Hills, so they were pretty close to it. Other than that, my family's been pretty much okay. We're sort of out of the way, except for them. So, but they're doing okay, and haven't lost any of their property. And I just am thinking of everybody back home, not just my family. So it's obviously sad, but no, they're doing okay.
How close are they to some of those wildfires?
They were pretty close, within a few miles. My grandparents are maybe 20 miles from it. My parents live now, they're pretty far. They're up in Northern California ish area, so they're kind of out of the way.
Yeah. But you still have some family in that area.
Yeah, so. Relatively nearby.
How much has that been weighing on your mind? Obviously, you got to worry about school. You got to worry about playing hockey. I mean, how much has that been?
It's been okay. I think it's nice taking solace, knowing everyone's safe. At least my family, anyway. But it's obviously tragic to see how it's affecting people. But I'm confident in the community. Like, we've dealt with things like this pretty frequently, so I'm not too worried about it getting out of hand.
Where your parents live in Northern California?
They live in Mammoth Lakes.
Where's that near?
Sort of near Yosemite National Park, that whole like Sierra Nevada region.
So you when your school's over, you'll go back there?
Yeah, I get to spend some time up there. It's pretty nice.
Now let's talk Union women's hockey. The Garnet Chargers lost their third and fourth games in a row over the weekend, dropping the 4-2 decision at St. Lawrence last Friday and a 4-0 loss to Clarkson last Saturday. The last four games Union has played, as we said, all losses were against nationally ranked teams, so it was a tough go for them. But maybe crass to say they get a break this weekend when they play Dartmouth and Harvard, two teams that bring up the rear in women's ECAC hockey play. Dartmouth in last place, Harvard in 11th. The Union did beat them earlier in the season, so maybe this is a good way to get back on track for the Garnet Chargers and maybe stifle the talk about another second-half collapse. In the last couple of years, they've struggled in the second half. Of course, last year they lost their final 12 games of the regular season and made it 13 in a row when they lost to Yale in the ECAC Hockey Tournament first-round game. So let's first hear from Union assistant coach Sean Skelly, who filled in for Tony Macy, who was away on some business. So let's see what Sean Skelly had to say about this weekend's games. Sean, finally you don't get to play ranked teams this weekend. It was a tough four-game stretch there, but what did you guys learn from that four-game stretch, and how do you apply it to this weekend when you go on the road to Dartmouth and Harvard?
Yeah, I thought obviously coming out of the break, you hope that we're ready to go. I thought obviously against Quinnipiac, they were a little more ready. Obviously the score dictated that. I thought our game was a little bit better the next night against Princeton. It started to build a little bit off of the break, and then actually thought we played a really good hockey game against SLU. Obviously didn't come out on the right end of that one, but I thought we were building correctly. And then Clarkson came in and that juggernaut, they took it to us a little bit. So kind of had a little setback there on the Saturday afternoon game. But, for us, we're still in a good spot. Kind of everything is, really up to us at this point, which is great. We're not having to worry about anybody else, either win or lose games. It's up to what we want to do. And the girls know that. We've talked about it. And, hopefully we get a good week of practice here and be ready for, this weekend.
This is a program the last couple of years that had rough second halves. I mean, last year the team lost 13 in a row to close out the season. Yeah, you didn't want to start the second half with four losses. But how do you keep the team's morale up and the confidence up and not try to, of course you weren't here last couple of years, so I mean, how do you try to tell these guys it's okay, we're still in good shape?
Yeah, you know what? Like, I think you got to understand the past. You know, and we have brought that up and within the room and understand that this is a whole different hockey team, no matter what, if there's girls that are a part of that from previous years. Obviously, our staff wasn't a part of it, and we don't want to be a part of, you know, the 12 or 13 game losing streak. So it's up to our staff to work extra hard and prepare our players moving forward to, again, put all eggs in one basket, and that's Friday night against Dartmouth, and go from there, whether that is a win or a loss. But we're going to do our job to prepare our players both on and off the ice as much as we possibly can to flip that script and get back in the win column, and again take care of what we can, and right now we're ahead of them in the standings, and that's something that means a lot to us, and we want to stay there.
You kind of touched on it a little bit in your first answer, but how do you guys feel about where you're at right now? Because you know, you look at the record, you're 5-8 in conference, but coming off a gauntlet of that conference schedule with, you know, a nice chunk of it still ahead of you to even make up some ground, but kind of middle. Where do you just feel about where you guys are at right
Yeah, now? So I think, again, we were playing teams that, you know, predominantly were above us in the standings, and we know that again, we essentially control our own destiny to potentially be one of those teams that can host the first round game. And I don't think that's ever happened here in the past, and that's something that is definitely on our list of something to accomplish, especially being the last year at Mesa. I think that would be a fitting end to the arena to be able to play at least one playoff game, if not hopefully more, in the future, later this year. But you know, I think with what's in front of us here, the next two weekends, three important conference games out of the four, can give us, if we're able to take care of our business, we can separate ourselves immensely and really set ourselves up and put ourselves in the driver's seat to be able to be in one of those four spots to host a game.
You beat Dartmouth and Harvard early in the season. What's going to take to repeat and get the sweeps this weekend?
Yeah, I think a lot of what gave us success before that, obviously we had really good goaltending, didn't really give up a lot both of those games. We had timely goal scoring. I think we had a couple power play goals in that weekend as well. So special teams are going to be huge. We obviously gave up a few power play goals against over the last four games, and so we're trying to clean that up, stay out of the box. That always is an easy one, but calls happen. And I think just playing our game. If we can play within our structure, play with pace, play very good defensively, and score timely goals, that's been our recipe in the first half when we had success. We got to get back to that, and I think we'll be okay.
And now let's hear from the players. Here are defensemen Marin Friday and forwards Maddie Leaney and Amanda Kwan.
Well, guys, for the first time in a while, you don't get to play ranked teams this weekend. So how much does that maybe help you guys a little bit to play somebody who's not ranked in the polls?
Yeah, Kwan, do you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously our league is so tight and every game matters. We're kind of right in the thick of it for competing for home ice or playoffs, and that's really our goal. We know going into every weekend, every game is a playoff game, and that's really our mindset. So even though there may not be a number next to their name, like in our heads, we know it's a big game regardless.
Yeah, I think coming off break, we had tough teams to play against, and so I think we're not satisfied with our performances these last couple weekends. So I think going into this weekend, we have improvements that we want to make, and we want to go back to, I think, what was working for us in the first half, which is just playing hard, playing a hard physical game, and hitting the details.
Yeah, I think one thing we talked about was these teams right now are below us in the standings, the ECAC. So for us, they're must-win games. So that's kind of the main focus for us. Doesn't matter if they're ranked or not.
Do you guys, and we'll go down the line this way, do you guys feel like right now Coach would say that you kind of have everything in front of you? Because obviously you've gone through a bit of a gauntlet, but you still have all these opportunities ahead. Is that kind of where your mindset is right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing we can do to change the past four games for us. All we can do is kind of learn from it and focus on what we do good and not, like, stray away from anything just because the past couple games haven't worked out in our favor.
Yeah, I think just looking ahead to these next couple games, there are opportunities for us to kind of make a statement after these last couple weekends. And so I think we just want to approach them as a playoff game and know that they are incredibly important for playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with what these two said. I think every day is a new day for us, even coming into practice. You know, each week we have a goal, and going into the weekend, we want to try and accomplish that goal. But obviously, we've got playoffs coming up, and we really want to be hitting our stride by the time that time of the season rolls around. So everything is just a building step for us.
Well, I mean, you probably guys are probably sick of me talking about the last couple of years, but how important is it to come away this weekend with two wins and maybe put that talk aside that, you know, the second half collapses that you guys had the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important, but I think from our mindset, we're not even thinking about last season's. That's out of our mind. I think we're treating this as a completely new season, new team, and so I think going into the next coming games, we're not thinking about past records. Instead, we're just thinking about the future and where we want to go with the program. So.
Yeah, I completely agree with Marin. There's nothing we can do to change what has happened in the past, so all we can do is look forward. And Tony has even said, like, we're not the same group that we were, like, especially even last year with what happened. Like, he's like, forget about it. We have this year to worry about, so we're not even thinking about it.
You've beaten these two teams earlier in the season here at Messner Rink. What's going to be the key to, you know, completing the sweep?
Like I said, they're must-win games for us, so just going back to what made us successful, especially in the first half against these two teams, and I think we'll be just fine.
Amanda, for you, I mean, do you have family down in the L.A. area in California? I mean, what has it been like dealing with that? Have you been on your mind at all?
Yeah, it's definitely been on my mind. It's honestly heartbreaking. You know, you scroll through social media and the news, and that's really the first thing you see. I think it's obviously, it means a lot to me and my family, especially my parents. Both of them grew up just about like 15 minutes away from both the Eaton Fire and the Palisades Fire, and we've had loved ones and friends have to evacuate. I remember my dad was telling me a neighborhood burned down that he used to go see Christmas lights in. So honestly, it's really hard, but I'm so thankful for all the men and women on the front lines, fighting their best, doing their best. I know containment has been up. But I've seen our community come out, and I know how strong LA is, and I'm so proud of us, and I know we'll get through this.
How do you, obviously, Bill, in mind, of course, you have school in your mind, you have, you know, playing hockey in your mind. How do you try to juggle all that?
Yeah, I think there's a time and place for everything. You know, when you're at the rink, you're worrying about hockey. When you're in the classroom, you're worrying about that. But, you know, sometimes when I'm at home, you know, just checking in at night, seeing how things are up to. But I definitely think, like, it's manageable, and there's a time and a place.
Coming up, I'll speak with American International Men's Head Hockey Coach Eric Lang. We'll talk about the stunning announcement back in November that the school is dropping their hockey program from Division I to Division II. And then we'll talk about the organizing of the College Hockey Transfer Showcase by Eric. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
College hockey's elite teams, coaches, and student athletes. ECAC Hockey, 12 programs competing at the highest level. A league where champions are born and world-class professionals are trained. Where history is abundant and a commitment to the cutting edge is unrivaled. The best facilities, the fiercest competition. ECAC Hockey, there's no experience like it.
What's up, everybody? This is Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio's Freddie and Harry Show, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with my man Ken Schott, the Daily Gazette sports editor.
Welcome back to the podcast. My next guest has been coaching the American International Men's Hockey Team since 2016. He's won 4 American Hockey Association regular season titles. I should say Atlantic Hockey Association regular season titles and then 3 tournament titles. Unfortunately, back in November, the school announced that it was dropping its men's hockey program from Division I to Division II. We're also going to talk about some initiative he's going to run in April. Please welcome to the program, the podcast, Eric Lang of American International, the head coach of the team. Eric, how's it going?
We could be better, Ken, but we're plugging away and appreciate you having me on here. We got 2 big games with Sacred Heart this weekend, so we're coming off a bye week, and we're certainly excited about that.
Yeah, let me ask you about that, Eric. I mean, in November, as I mentioned at the top there, we were stunned to hear that announcement. How stunned was the team? How stunned were you? And you, I mean, you're a graduate of this school. Did you see this coming at all?
You know what? When we look at it from the hockey side of the barn, you know, we've been as good as any team in the country over the last 6 or 7 years. You know, you made a allude to the 4 regular season championships, 3 NCAA tournament berths, and 9 years ago was something I think at AIC was, you know, we couldn't really even dream about that. We were one of the, you know, the 50 to 60th ranked hockey team consistently. And, you know, so from a hockey side of things, we've kind of held up our end of the bargain. Unfortunately, our school administration, in this tough times of small liberal arts colleges, you know, the hockey program was costing the school some money, and I think they made a financial decision here to kind of dial it back to Division II, which we were completely blindsided by. In fact, 30 days prior to the news, we were looking at pro formas potentially for a rink on campus, and it felt like maybe we were going to double down once again on our hockey program here. And, you know, I walked into a meeting and, was devastated by the news. I was really numb walking out of there, and, immediately thought about what am I going to do? And then secondarily, thought about, well, now what about these poor players that are about to get this bad news? And, our president wanted to deliver the news, and she did. And then, I shortly met with the team right after that. So all in the same day, if you can get a visual of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can picture a lot of angry players in that locker room when you met with them.
You know what? To watch their faces when our president told them the news, and, you know, I didn't have a whole lot to say at that time. It's a lot of stunned looks. I saw some tears. I saw a lot of people grab their cell phone immediately. And, I didn't have a whole lot of answers for them, you know, right in that moment. And, you know, we met in the locker room probably about an hour later. I just said, hey, guys, you know, you guys made a bet on American International, and you made a bet on me personally, and you know I'm going to do everything I can to make sure we properly place you back into college hockey. And that was kind of the message. And you know, it kind of ended with, you know, we've got 4 months left here together. We're going to do everything we can to create the greatest experience we can for you guys, and you have our word on that. And you know, we've been trying to deliver on that. It's been a heavy lift, Ken. There's no script for trying to coach a team game while we have, you know, really 25, 26 players. They're really fending for themselves right now. So, we're trying to find different ways to motivate them. We've had a handful of players leave as well. So I thought we might have a major league movie type rally in us. And, it hasn't quite come to fruition, but we have a good hockey team here, and we're trying to get this thing on track.
I mean, did the school ever, you know, you say you're blindsided. I mean, was there ever a thought for the school to probably look for fundraising efforts and try to keep the program at D1?
You know, Ken, there wasn't a whole lot of collaboration, and our school is in transition as well. We have an interim president, and we have an interim athletic director. And, it's kind of, you know, I don't have an office on campus. My only office is at the Mass Mutual Center, which is only about a mile away. But they're just, you know, hindsight is 2020. I maybe I could have taken a little more initiative just in terms of making sure we're financially stable as a program. But at the end of the day, Ken, we're operating with bare bones here at AIC. Prior to any of this, you know, I wouldn't think of AIC as a heavily resourced Division I hockey program, and we've always been in the solution business and try and find a way to yes. And we've been very creative through the years to stretch our dollar. We've been very creative to make sure we're creating a great experience for our student athletes. I'd still put us in the bottom two or three schools in terms of how we're funded and the resources we are afforded. But, you know, we don't make any excuses. And, you know, like I said, I think we've done a pretty darn good job over the years of what we've had. And, yeah, it's unfortunate. And, you know, the kind of devastating to me personally as a, you know, I played there and I was fortunate enough to work for Gary Wright. He was one of the most important people in my life. I was fortunate enough to go back and work for him. And, yeah, it feels like, almost feels like, you know, you built a business from scratch and then it's, you know, it's going to go bankrupt. That's kind of the best way for me to describe it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's too many teams in Division II. So how's AIC going to compete with that?
You know, I haven't had any real conversation in terms of what the landscape moving forward is. I know one thing. I'm a pretty good Division I college hockey coach, and that's where I want to, you know, that's where I want to get back to on a personal level. I don't have a whole lot of energy for for Division II, and I don't mean that in any way, shape, or form. I just, you know, I'm determined to be a Division I head coach somewhere, and you know, that'll be my focus after the season here.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of veteran coaches are stepping down after the season, like Cornell's Mike Schaefer just announced that Ferris State Bob Danner is going to be stepping down. Jim Jackson, Notre Dame. But a lot of these coaches that are stepping down, they already have coaches in waiting. So I mean, how patient do you have to be to wait for the perfect opening for you?
Yeah, you know what? I've been really loyal to AIC. In particular, last 5 or 6 years, I've turned down, you know, 3 opportunities to remain at my alma mater. And, you know, I always say it's a lot easier to get a job when you have a job. And, you know, I think there may be some pro opportunity that may come to fruition here. My heart is with college hockey. I'd love to stay in college hockey, but, I'm open to, I'll be open to anything. The good news for me is, I have a really good contract at AIC, and, financially I'll be okay for as long as it takes me potentially to get a job. But, I'm hoping that that's not going to take too long.
Yeah. How much did the COVID maybe coming out of COVID, you know, I think you guys did play during the COVID season. I mean, how much did that maybe take a toll down the road here?
You know, Ken, it's a really good point. And, you know, we've kind of tossed and turned just about every avenue of the why. And, you know, I think, again, small liberal arts college, tuition-based institution, coming out of COVID, our student-athlete numbers are down, but our regular enrollment is down just a tad. And, you know, I'm sure there are multiple factors that led into this decision. And, you know, the one thing we're proud of is we don't think the hockey on ice product, we certainly know that that didn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah. I'm trying to recall, I mean, Union and AIC have a little bit of a bond there. It was AIC who was the opponent that Union faced when they celebrated the national championship. Were you there that night or at the assistant coach?
My first game that I coached as head coach at AIC was against Union.
Okay.
It was a 5-3 loss in Springfield. So it had to be the following year because Union was returning a trip home.
Okay. So, yeah, I know you know, Gary Wright was coaching at that time and there was a big celebration. I think Gary was appreciative of being a part of that celebration. But as far as the players are concerned, how important is it them knowing that this is their last year at playing Division I hockey at AIC, how important is it them for to play hard, play well, that way maybe other teams notice, other schools notice them?
Yeah, for us right now, we're all really dependent on one another. And, it's the most unbelievable team game, and yet these guys are kind of, and I totally understand it, but they're kind of in a position where they need to fend for themselves. And, you know, their more selfish play has showed up here. And, you know, it's my job to get it back on the guardrails, but I totally understand why. And, through the years here at AIC, the strength of our team has been the team.
you know, we don't, you know, we don't run around with NHL draft picks, and we don't have a you know, guys that are going to play in the National Hockey League when they graduate from here. And you know, so that's been the biggest thing for us. And I think we're getting to a place, you know, as we're in the second half here, that, you know what, we're dependent on one another. Our success depends on one another. And, you know, hopefully we can get back to playing a great team game.
Yeah. Well, speaking of players, I mean, you are organizing the College Hockey Transfer Showcase that's going to take place in April 5th and 6th in Simsbury, Connecticut. What was the genesis behind this idea to have a College Hockey Transfer Showcase?
You know, it stems to that meeting that we had in the locker room where I basically said, hey, I'll be willing to do whatever it takes to make sure you guys, you know, remain in college hockey. And I'm hoping for most it's in the Division I level, and for some it might be at the Division III level. And I was trying to think about how am I going to make good on this, because, you know, we're in a position right now where we're having some roster shrinkage, where teams are opting down to 26-man rosters. And, you know, we have major junior, we have U sports. So right now, college hockey has the opportunity to get as deep as it's ever been. It has the opportunity to get as good as it's ever been. And, I put my own recruiting hat on and said, hey, well, maybe I would be patient right now. If, you know, there were some AIC guys available, maybe I want to see if there's anything better out there. And it did get me thinking a little bit, as, you know, what if we were able to just get a, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 guys from the transfer portal, get them all under one roof, and let's get them competitive, and let's get them playing some games against each other. And it was as organic and as genuine as that. And then I started to really think about it, and I quickly just did a Google search, and I did see that this does happen a little bit in soccer, and it does happen in baseball and some other sports. And I just said, you know what, why not hockey?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, with the transfer portal the way it is now, I mean, just kids can basically act as free agents.
And you know what, and I also think about it from a coaching perspective, and we've done a really good job in the transfer portal, and we've also missed in the transfer portal. And I think one of the toughest things to do is to project on a player. So we've, you know, Brian Kramer was a really good player for us last year, Defensive Player of the Year in Atlantic Hockey. He goes to Western Michigan. Now, some of those kind of make sense, and they're kind of easy to handicap. But the one that is really tough is, okay, there's a kid at Colorado College, you know, Danny Waite, and we got a kid in Worcester Dackney. They haven't played a lot of hockey the last 2 years, but they had prolific junior careers. So what does that player look like 2 years down the road, who's only played, you know, 9 games in 2 years, and inside of those 9 games, he's only played 45, 46 minutes, you know? Mm-hmm. So from a recruiting perspective, I think it's a no-brainer. We get all these guys under one roof. We get to see them compete against each other, and, you know, it takes a little bit of the guesswork out of it. You know, a guy from Hockey East who's, you know, played 13, 14, 15 games, what does he look like versus a guy who's maybe in the CCHA, who's, you know, a half a point a game guy. And I think each circumstance is different and unique. And I think it would be one of the most fun events to recruit, because quite often when we go on the road, we're looking to try and identify, is he a college hockey player? Well, now we get to go to one location in Simsbury, Connecticut on April 5th and 6th and say, you know what, these are all college hockey players. It's just, is he a good fit for my program?
And it's right between the regional final and the Frozen Four, so that's a good time for some hockey.
Be great.
Yeah. How do you think, I mean, obviously, you're probably not recruiting, I mean, but how do you think allowing major junior players from the Canadian major junior is going to affect college hockey?
You know, I think it has the opportunity to create deeper rosters for all. I think Atlantic Hockey can be an incredible beneficiary of it. You know, the bigger the player pool. At the end of the day, Boston College and the University of Michigan, and, you know, they can only have so many players, right? So now the pool has now has been opened substantially. And if you, you know, if you do your homework and you can get in, you know, there's 300, 400, 500 more eligible players right now for college hockey. I think it's going to make for a deeper, better game. And I think it's going to be good for, I know you do a great job covering union. I think it's going to be great for the unions of the world and the RPIs of the world that, you know, maybe they're not able to go toe to toe against, you know, some of these Big Ten schools, but, you know, there's just now more players available. And I think Division III hockey is going to be an incredible beneficiary as well.
I mean, do you see colleges that right now maybe have club hockey, like, you know, Alabama, Georgia, maybe out west, UCLA, USC. Do you see maybe those kind of schools adding college hockey to maybe get some more teams involved?
Man, I just saw the University of Georgia opened up a brand new rink, and that looks tremendous. And I think it takes one school to take a leap of faith. And, you know, besides basketball and obviously football, hockey's the third best revenue-generating sport there is. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a no-brainer in some of these areas you mentioned, the SEC and even schools like Iowa State and Iowa out in the Midwest. And, you know, there was, you know, rumors for a while about University of Illinois adding hockey.
Yeah, there's Navy been talked about.
I'm sorry?
Navy's been talked about a few times.
Navy's been talked about. And, you know, you have hockey out in Seattle now growing, and now these Western Hockey League kids are now eligible. Maybe that trickles down into California. I mean, at the end of the day, right now, here's one thing we know. There's not enough chairs at the table, so there's more great players that are not going to play Division I hockey mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah.
Because there's just not enough opportunity.
How do you think it affects the junior leagues in the United States with the USHL and North American Hockey League? I mean,
it feels like a wait and see, and what is the trickle-down effect here? You know, the USHL, in my opinion, is still, one of the top leagues in the world. And, you know, we've done a good job in the USHL. We've done a good job in the North American Hockey League. You know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how this all shakes out. And I think it's a lot of guesswork for all of us. And, you know, I'm doing a lot of talking to coaches right now, And man, I there's been more assistants on the road for 10, 12, 13, 14 day stints, just trying to get a grasp of things. And, you know, what does the top player in the OHL look like versus a top player in the USHL? And, you know, it almost brings me back a little bit to that transfer portal. It'd be nice if we're able to get them under one roof and evaluate, but that, you know, that's not going to be the case.
Yeah. Well, Eric, I appreciate a few minutes. I mean, good luck with the rest of the season. Good luck with your situation. Hopefully, you'll land on your feet in Division I. And, yeah, good luck with the College Hockey Transfer Showcase. It'll be interesting to see how many players turn out for that.
Ken, this was great, and I appreciate you having me on. You do a great job over there with Union, and love following your stuff. So thanks again.
Well, I appreciate it, Eric. Thank you very much. That's Eric Lang. We'll be back up, wrap up the podcast, and have the latest winner of the Daily Gazette's You Pick 'em Football Contest in just a moment.
Explore the benefits of subscribing to the Daily Gazette, like our convenient e-edition, app, personalized newsletters, and unique reader rewards when you join. Start your membership today. Offers redeemable at www.dailygazette.com.
Hi, this is Craig Conroy, Calgary Flames General Manager, Clarkson Hockey Legend, and New York State Hockey Hall of Famer. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Back to wrap up the podcast.
The Week 19 winner in the Daily Gazette's You Pick'em Football Contest was Martha Chiplock of Albany with a 6-0 record. Martha won the $100 Hannaford gift card. Congratulations, Martha. The VIP winner was my buddy John Keller of Katy O'Burns with a 5-1 record. I went 4-2 to improve to 201-77. My Gazette colleague Adam Schinder went 3-3. He is 196-82 on the season. I'll announce the You Pick'em Football Contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Thursday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the You Pick'em Football banner. Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. Don't forget to download the Daily Gazette app and sign up for our e-edition so you never miss a headline. Subscribe today at www.dailygazette.com. We have a lot of great specials going on. When credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I want to thank members of the Union men's and women's hockey teams, Bill Rabinowitz and Eric Lang, for being a part of the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at shot, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on Blue Sky, X, and Threads at Slapshots. The views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Daily Gazette Company. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Daily Gazette Company. I'm Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports, and we remember Sam Moore of the soul group Sam and Dave, who died last Friday at the age of 89. They had hits like Hold On, I'm Coming, I Thank You, and this one, which got a second life in 1978 thanks to the Blues Brothers, Soul Man. Rest in peace, Sam. Play it, Steve.